So welcome everyone. Today we will be continuing our telling of the story of Mahosadha, which is the Buddhist epic if ever there were one. And so we've more or less come to the end of the story. We're at the climax right now. And so what has happened is King Wideha was tricked, and it's not very difficult to trick this king, as it turns out he's a bit of a dimwit and quite gullible. And like kings often are, he follows after his emotions more than using his reason. He doesn't seem to have much reason to begin with. And he's tricked into chasing after the daughter of a foreign king. And the idea is that they will trick King Wideha into coming to marry the king's daughter, and when he comes to perform the marriage, then they will trap him and kill him. And Mahosadha realizes that this is the case and tries to warn the king, and the king doesn't listen. And instead the king is ready to banish Mahosadha for not wanting him to go to marry this beautiful woman. And so Mahosadha, out of kindness and gratitude towards the king, he suggests that he goes on ahead and prepares the way for King Wideha to come. And King Wideha is happy with this and tells him to go and get things ready for the marriage. But when Mahosadha gets there and he knows that there's going to be a trap, he makes some fairly incredible preparations. He builds a city outside of the hostile king's city, builds a tunnel which goes from the new city to the old city, and then from the new city to the river, and manages to kidnap the queen and the princess who is to be married to King Wideha, and send them with the king to escape via the river all the way back to the city of Mithila. And where we left off, the Bodhisattva had just managed this escape and was just heading back to the new city to be surrounded by King Julani's forces, the hostile king's forces. And Wideha asks him, "Why are you going back? The king is ready to kill you and kill me. Why would you go back to such a thing?" And he says, "Well, my men are still there. The people who built this city, the people who have been protecting and working, and some of them are sick, some of them are asleep, some of them are not ready for travel, so we couldn't take them all with us." So he says, "I'm going to bring them all back without any bloodshed. I'm going to bring every one of them back safe and sound," which is incredible because he's been surrounded by... See, this is through the escape tunnel that he's made, and he's going back through the escape tunnel to be surrounded by King Julani and his 101 sub-kings or princes. And so right now we're on page 76. I don't know if anyone has the link. If you want, I can find the link here. I'll send the link if anyone wants to follow along who doesn't have it yet. And we're on page 76, at paragraph 448. So we end with, "And the next morning he, the king, was in Mithila. But the Bodhisattva went to the gate of the tunnel, and drawing his sword, which was slung over his shoulder, he buried it in the sand at the gate of the tunnel. Then he entered the tunnel and went into the town, and bathed himself in scented water and ate a choice meal, and retired to his goodly couch, glad to think that the desire of his heart had been fulfilled." This is being surrounded by a host of armies. He's quite an incredible being that he's able to sleep soundly, being surrounded by hostile forces. When the night was ended, King Julani gave his orders to the army and came up to the city. The master, the Buddha, explained it thus. The mighty Chulaniya watched all night and at sunrise approached Upakari, this is the new town. Mounting his noble elephant, strong, 60 years old, Chulaniya, mighty king of the Panchala, addressed his army, fully armed with a jeweled harness, an arrow in his hand. He addressed his men, collected in great numbers. Then, to describe them in kind, men mounted on elephants, life guardsmen, charioteers, footmen, men skilled in archery, bowmen, all gathered together. Now the king commanded them to take Videha alive. Send the tusked elephants, mighty, 60 years old, let them trample down the city which Videha has nobly built. Let the arrows fly this way and that way, sped by the bow, arrows like the teeth of calves, sharp-pointed, piercing the very bones. Let heroes come forth in armor clad, with weapons finely decorated, bold and heroic, ready to face an elephant. Spears bathed in oil, their points glittering like fire, stand gleaming like the constellations of 100 stars. At the onset of such heroes with mighty weapons, clad in mail and armor, who never run away, how shall Videha escape, even if he fly like a bird? My 39,000 warriors, all picked men, whose like I never saw, all my mighty host. See the mighty tusked elephants, caparisoned of 60 years, on whose backs are the brilliant and goodly princes. Brilliant are they on their backs, as the gods of Nandana, with glorious ornaments, glorious dress and robes, swords of the color of sheat fish, well-oiled, glittering, held fast by mighty men, well finished, very sharp, shining, spotless, made of tempered steel, strong, held by mighty men who strike and strike again. In golden trappings and blood-red girths, they gleam as they turn like lightning in a thick cloud. Mailed heroes with banners waving, skilled in the use of sword and shield, grasping the hilt, accomplished soldiers, mighty fighters on elephant back. Encompassed by such as these, thou hast no escape. I see no power by which thou canst come to Mithila. Little does he know he's already gone to Mithila and arrived. Thus he threatened Videha, thinking to capture him then and there, and goading his elephant, bidding the army seize and strike and kill, King Julani came like a flood to the city of Upakari. Then the great being's spies thought, who knows what will happen, and with their attendants surrounded him. Then the bodhisattva rose from his bed and attended to his bodily needs, and after breakfast adorned and dressed himself, putting on his kasi robe worth 100,000 pieces of money, and with his red robe over one shoulder, and holding his presentation staff, inlaid with the 7 precious jewels, golden sandals upon his feet, and being fanned with a yak-tail fan like some divine nymph, richly arrayed, came up on the terrace, and opening a window, showed himself to King Julani, as he walked to and fro with the grace of the King of the Gods. And King Julani, seeing his beauty, could not find peace of mind, but quickly drove up his elephant, thinking that he should take him now. The sage thought, he has hastened hither, expecting that Videha is caught. He knows not that his own children are taken and that our king is gone. I will show my face like a golden mirror and speak to him. So, standing at the window, he uttered these words in a sweet voice as honey. Why have you driven up your elephant thus in haste? You come with a glad look. You think you have gotten what you want. Throw down that bow. Put away that arrow. Put off that shining armor set with jewels and coral. When he heard the man's voice, he thought, the clodhopper is making fun of me. Today I will see what is to be done with him. Then threatened him, saying, your countenance looks pleased, you speak with a smile. It is in the hour of death that such beauty is seen. As they thus talked together, the soldiers noticed the great being's beauty. Our king, they said, is talking with the wise Mahosada. What can it be about? Let us listen to their talk. So they drew near the king. But the sage, when the king had finished speaking, replied, "You do not know that I am the wise Mahusadha. I will not suffer you to kill me. Your plan is thwarted. What was thought in the heart of you and Kevata has not come to pass. But that has come to pass which you said with your lips, which is that he would marry King Videha to his daughter." And he explained this by saying, "Your thunders are in vain, O king. Your plan is thwarted, man of war. The king is as hard for you to catch as a thoroughbred for a hack. Our king crossed the Ganges yesterday with his courtiers and attendants. You will be like a crow trying to chase the royal goose." Again, like a maned lion without fear, he gave an illustration in these words. "Jackals in the night time, seeing the Judas tree in flower, think the flower to be lumps of meat, and gather in troops, these vilest of beasts. When the watches of the night are past and the sun has risen, they see the Judas tree in flower and lose their wish, these vilest of beasts. Even so you, O king, for all that you have surrounded Videha, shall lose your wish and go as the jackals went from the Judas tree." When the king heard his fearless words, he thought the clodhopper is bold enough in his speech. No doubt Videha must have escaped. He was very angry. Long ago, he thought, "Through this clodhopper I had not so much as a rag to cover me. Now by his doing, my enemy who was in my hand has escaped. In truth he has done me much evil, and I will be revenged on him for both." Then he gave orders as follows: "Cut off his hands and feet, ear and nose, for he delivered Videha, my enemy, from my hands. Cut off his flesh and cook it on skewers, for he delivered Videha, my enemy, out of my hands. As a bull's hide is spread out on the ground, or a lion's or tiger's fastened flat with pegs, so I will peg him out and pierce him with spikes, for he has delivered Videha, my enemy, out of my hand." The great being smiled when he heard this and thought, "This king does not know that his queen and family have been conveyed to me by me to Mithila, and so he's giving all these orders about me. But in his anger he might transfix me with an arrow, or do something else that might please him. I will therefore overwhelm him with pain and sorrow, and will make him faint on his elephant's back, while I tell him about it." So he said, "If you cut off my hands and feet, my ears and nose, so will Videha deal with Panchalachanda," this is his son, "so with Panchalachandi," which is his daughter, "so with Queen Nanda," his wife, "your wife and children. If you cut off my flesh and cook it on skewers, so will Videha cook that of Panchalachanda, of Panchalachandi, of Queen Nanda, your wife and children. If you peg me out and pierce me with spikes, so will Videha deal with Panchalachanda, with Panchalachandi, with Queen Nanda, your wife and children. So it has been secretly arranged between me and Videha. Like as a leather shield of 100 layers carefully wrought by the leather workers is a defense to keep off arrows, so I bring happiness and avert trouble from glorious Videha, and I keep off your devices as a shield keeps off an arrow." Hearing this, the king thought, "What is this clodhopper talking of? As I do to him," quoth, "so King Videha will do to my family? He does not know that I have set a careful guard over my family, but he is only threatening me in fear of instant death. I don't believe what he says." The great being divined that he thought him to be speaking in fear, and resolved to explain. So he said, "Come, sire, see your inner apartments are empty. Wife, children, mother, O warrior, were carried through a tunnel and put in charge of Videha." Then the king thought, "The sage speaks with much assurance. I did hear in the night beside the Ganges the voice of Queen Nanda. Very wise is the sage, perhaps he speaks the truth." Great grief came upon him, but he gathered all his courage and, dissembling his grief, sent a courtier to inquire and recited this stanza: "Come, enter my inner apartments and inquire whether the man's words be truth or lies." The messenger with his attendants went and opened the door and entered. There, with hands and feet bound and gags in their mouths, hanging to pegs, he discovered the sentries of the inner apartments, the dwarfs and hunchbacks and so forth. Broken vessels were scattered about with food and drink. The doors of the treasury were broken open and the treasure plundered. The bedroom with the open doors and a tribe of crows which had come in by the open windows. It was like a deserted village or a place of corpses. In this inglorious state he beheld the palace. And he told the news to the king, saying, "Even so, sire, as Mahosada said, empty is your inner palace like a waterside village inhabited by crows." The king, trembling with grief at the loss of his four dear ones, said, "This sorrow has come on me through the clodhopper, and like a snake struck with a stick, he was exceedingly wroth with the bodhisattva. When the great being saw his appearance, he thought, 'This king has great glory. If he should ever in anger say, "What do I want with so-and-so?" in a warrior's pride, he might hurt me. Suppose I should describe the beauty of Queen Nanda to him, making as if he had never seen her. He would then remember her and would understand that he would never recover his precious woman if he killed me. Then, out of love to his spouse, he would do me no harm." So, standing for safety in the upper story, he removed his golden-covered hand from beneath his red robe, and pointing the way by which she went, he described her beauties thus: "This way, sire, went the woman beauteous in every limb, her lips like plates of gold, her voice like the music of the wild goose. This way was she taken, sire, the woman beauteous in every limb, clad in silken raiment, dark with fair girdle of gold. Her feet red and fair to see, with girdles of gold and jewels, with eyes like a pigeon, slender, with lips like bimba fruit, and slender waist, well-born, slender-waisted like a creeper or a place of sacrifice. Her hair long, black, and a little curled out at the end, well-born like a fawn, like a flame in the fire in wintertime, like a river hidden in the clefts of a mountain under the low reeds, beauteous in nose or thigh, peerless, with breasts like tindok fruit, not too long, not too short, not hairless, and not too hairy." Odd thing to see in a Buddhist text, I suppose, but there's purpose here. As the great being thus praised her grace, it seemed to the king as if he had never seen her before. Great longing arose in him, and the great being who perceived this recited a stanza: "And so you are pleased at Nanda's death, glorious king. Now Nanda and I will go before Yama, the lord of death." In all this, the great being praised Nanda and no one else, and this was his reason. People never love others as they do a beloved wife. And he praised her only because he thought that if the king remembered her, he would remember his children also. When the wise great being praised her in this voice of honey, Queen Nanda seemed to stand in person before the king. Then the king thought, "No other save Mahosada can bring back my wife and give her to me." As he remembered, sorrow came over him. Thereupon the great being said, "Be not troubled, sire. Queen and son and mother shall all come back. My return is the only condition. Be comforted, majesty." So he comforted the king, and the king said, "I watched and guarded my own city so carefully. I have surrounded the city of Upakari with so great a host. Yet this wise man has taken out of my guarded city queen and son and mother, and has handed them over to Videha. Whilst we were besieging the city without a single one's knowing, he sent Videha away with his army and transport. Can it be that he knows magic, or how to delude the eyes?" And he questioned Mahosada thus: "Do you study magical art, or have you bewitched my eyes, that you have delivered Videha, my enemy, out of my hand?" On hearing this, the great being said, "Sire, I do know magic, for wise men who have learnt magic, when danger comes, deliver both themselves and others." "Wise men, sire, learn magic in this world. They deliver themselves wise men full of counsel. I have young men who are clever at breaking barriers. By the way which they made me, Videha has gone to Mithila." This suggested that he had gone by the decorated tunnel, so the king said, "What is this underground way?" and wished to see it. The great being understood from his look that this was what he wanted, and offered to show it to him. "Come see, O king, a tunnel well made, big enough for elephants and horses, chariots or foot soldiers, brightly illuminated, a tunnel well built." Then he went on, "Sire, behold the tunnel which was made by my knowledge, bright as though sun and moon rose within it, decorated with 80 great doors and 64 small doors, with 101 bedchambers, and many hundreds of lamp niches. Come with me in joy and delight, and with your guard enter the city of Upakari." With these words he caused the city gate to be thrown open, and the king with the 101 princes came in. The great being descended from the upper story and saluted the king, and led him with his retinue into the tunnel. When the king saw this tunnel like a decorated city of the gods, he spoke the praise of the bodhisattva. No small gain is it to the that Videha who has in his house or kingdom men so wise as you are, Mahosadha. Then the great being showed him the 101 bedchambers, the door of one being opened, and one shut, all shut. The king went first gazing at the tunnel, and the wise man went after. All the soldiers also entered the tunnel. But when the sage knew that the king had emerged from the tunnel, he kept the rest from coming out by going up to a handle and shutting the tunnel door. Then the 80 great doors and the 64 small doors, and the doors of the 101 bedchambers, and the doors of the hundreds of lamp niches all shut together, and the whole tunnel became dark as hell, and the great company were terrified. Now the great being took the sword, which he had hidden yesterday, as we read earlier, he had buried it in the sand. As he entered the tunnel, 18 cubits from the ground, he leaped into the air, descending and catching the king's arm, brandished the sword and frightened him, crying, "Sire, whose are all the kingdoms of India?" "Yours, wise sir, spare me," he replied. "Fear not, sire, I did not take up my sword for any wish to kill you, but in order to show my wisdom." Then he handed his sword to the king, and when he had taken it, Mahosadha said, "If you wish to kill me, sire, kill me now with that sword. If you wish to spare me, spare me." "Wise sir," he replied, "I promise your safety, fear not." So as he held the sword, they both struck up a friendship in all sincerity. Then the king said to the Bodhisattva, "Wise sir, with such wisdom as yours, why not seize the kingdom?" "Sire, if I wished it, this day I could take all the kingdoms of India and slay all the kings. But it is not the wise man's part to gain glory by slaying others." "Wise sir, a great multitude is in distress, being unable to get out. Open the tunnel door and spare their lives." Mahosadha opened the door, all the tunnel became a blaze of light. The people were comforted, all the kings with their retinue came out and approached the sage, who stood in the wide courtyard with the king. Then those kings said, "Wise sir, you have given us our lives. If the door had remained shut for a little while longer, all would have died there." "My lords," Mahosadha said, "this is not the first time your lives have been saved by me." "When, wise sir?" "Do you remember when all the kingdoms of India had been conquered except our city, and when you went to the park of Uttara Panchala, ready to drink the cup of victory?" "Yes, wise sir." "Then this king with Kevata, by evil device, had poisoned the drink and food, and intended to murder you. But I did not wish you to die a foul death before me. So I sent in my men and broke all the vessels and thwarted their plan and gave you your lives." They all in fear asked Julani, "Is this true, sire?" "Indeed," the king said, "what I did was by Kevata's advice. The sage speaks truth." Then they all embraced the great being and said, "Wise sir, you have been the salvation of us all. You have saved our lives." They all bestowed ornaments upon him in respect. The sage said to the king, "Fear not, sire. The fault lay in association with a wicked friend. Ask pardon of the kings." King Julani said, "I did the thing because of a bad man. It was my fault. Pardon me, never will I do such a thing again." He received their pardon, they confessed their faults to each other and became friends. Then the king sent for plenty of all sorts of food, perfumes and garlands, and for 7 days they all took their pleasure in the tunnel and entered the city and did great honor to the great being. And the king, surrounded by the 101 princes, sat on a great throne. And desiring to keep the sage in his court, he said, "Support and honor, double allowance of food and wages, and other great boons I give. Eat and enjoy at will, but do not return to Videha. What can he do for you?" But the sage declined in these words, "When one deserts a patron, sire, for the sake of gain, it is a disgrace to both oneself and the other. While Videha lives, I could not be another's man. While Videha remains, I could not live in another's kingdom." Then the king said to him, "Well, sir, when your king attains to Godhead, when he dies, promise me to come hither." "If I live, I will come, sire," Mahosadha promised. So the king did him great honor for 7 days, and after that, as he took his leave, he recited a stanza, promising to the king to give him this and that, promising to Mahosadha to give him this and that. "I give you 1,000 nikas of gold, 80 villages in Kasi, 400 female slaves and 100 wives." 100 wives. "Take all your army and go in peace, Mahosadha." And Mahosadha replied, Sire, do not trouble about your family. When my king went back to his country, I told him to treat Queen Nanda as his own mother, and Panchala Chanda as his younger brother, and I married your daughter to him with ceremonial sprinkling. I will soon send back your mother, wife, and son. Good, said the king, and gave him a dowry for his daughter, men and men slaves and women slaves, dress and ornaments, gold and precious metal, decorated elephants and horses and chariots. He then gave orders for the army to execute. Let them give even double quantity to the elephants and horses. Let them content charioteers and footmen with food and drink. This said, he dismissed the sage with these words, Go, wise sir, taking elephants, horses, chariots, and footmen. Let King Videha see you back in Mithila. Thus the king dismissed the sage with great honor. And the 101 kings did honor to the great being and gave him rich gifts. And the spies who had been on service with them surrounded the sage. With a great company he set out, and on the way he sent men to receive the revenues of those villages which King Julani had given him. Then he arrived at the kingdom of Videha. Now Senaka had placed a man in the way to watch and see whether King Julani came or not, and to tell him of the coming of anyone. He saw the great being at 3 leagues off, and returning told how the sage was returning with a great company. With this news, Senaka went to the palace. The king also looked out by a window in the upper story, saw the great host, and was frightened. The great being's company is small. This is very large. Can it be Julani comes himself? He put this question as follows. Elephants, horses, chariots, footmen, a great army is visible with 4 divisions, terrible in aspect. What does it mean, wise sirs? Senaka replied, The great joy is what you see, sire. Mahosada is safe with all his hosts. The king said to this, Senaka, the wise man's army is small. This is very great. Sire, King Julani must have been pleased with him and therefore must have given this host to him. The king proclaimed through the city by beat of drum, Let the city be decorated to welcome the return of the wise man. The townspeople obeyed. The wise man entered the city and came to the king's palace. Then the king rose and embraced him, and returning to his throne spoke pleasantly to him. As 4 men leave a corpse in the cemetery, so we left you in the kingdom of Kampiliya and returned. But you, by what color or what means or what device did you save yourself? The great being replied, By one purpose, Videha, I overmastered another. By plan I outdid plan, O warrior. And I encompassed the king as the ocean encompasses India. This pleased the king. Then the other told of the gifts which King Julani had made. 1,000 nikas of gold were given to me in 80 villages in Ghazi, 400 slave women and 100 wives, and with all the army I have returned safe home. Then the king, exceedingly pleased and overjoyed, uttered this pious hymn in praise of the great being's merit. Happiness truly comes by living with the wise. As birds from a closed cage, as fish from a net, so Mahosata set us free when we were in the hands of our enemies. Senaka answered him thus, Even so, sire, there is happiness with a wise man. As birds from a closed cage, as fish from the net, so Mahosata set us free when we were in the hands of our enemies. Then the king set the drum of festival beating around the city. Let there be a festival for 7 days, and let all who have good will do honor and service to the wise man. The Buddha thus explained it. Let them sound all manner of lutes, drums and tabors, let conch of Magadha boom, merrily roll the kettle drums. Townsfolk and country folk in general, eager to do honor to the sage, on hearing the proclamation made merry with a will. The master explained it thus. Women and maids, Vaisya and Brahmin wives, brought plenty of food and drink to the sage. Elephant drivers, lifeguardsmen, charioteers, footmen, all did the like. And so did all the people from the country and village assembled. The multitude were glad to see the sage returned, and at his reception, shawls were waved in the air. At the end of the festival, the great being went to the palace and said, Sire, King Julani's mother and wife and son should be sent back at once. Very good, my son, send them back. So he showed them all respect to those 3 and entertained also the host that had come with him. Thus he sent the 3 back well attended with his own men and the 100 wives and the 400 slave women whom the king had given him, he sent with Queen Nanda and the company that came with him, he also sent. When this great company reached the city of Uttarapanchala, the king asked his mother, "Did King Videha treat you well, my mother?" "My son, what are you saying? He treated me with the same honor as if I had been a goddess." Then she told how Queen Nanda had been treated as a mother and Panchala Chanda as her younger brother. This pleased the king very much, and he sent a rich gift. And from that time forward, both lived in friendship and amity. Now Panchala Chandi was very dear and precious to the king, and in the second year she bore him a son. In his 10th year, King Videha died. The bodhisattva raised the royal parasol for the son and asked leave to go to his grandfather, King Chulani. The boy said, "Wise sir, do not leave me in my childhood. I will honor you as a father." And Panchala Chandi said, "Wise sir, there is none to protect us if you go. Do not go." But he replied, "My promise has been given. I cannot but go." So amidst the lamentations of the multitude, he departed with his servants and came to Uttarapanchala city. The king, hearing of his arrival, came to meet him and led him into the city with great pomp and gave him a great house, and besides the 80 villages given at first, gave him another present, and he served that king. At that time, a religious woman named Bairi used to take her meals constantly in the palace. She was wise and learned, and she had never seen the great being before. She heard the report that the wise Mahosada was serving the king. He also had never seen her before, but had heard that a religious woman named Bairi had her meals in the palace. Now Queen Nanda was ill-pleased with the bodhisattva, because he had separated her from her husband's love and caused her annoyance. So she sent for 5 women who she trusted and said, "Watch for a fault in the wise man, and let us try to make him fall out with the king." So they went about looking for an occasion against him. And one day it so happened that this religious woman, after her meal, was going forth and caught sight of the bodhisattva in the courtyard on his way to wait on the king. He saluted her and stood still. She thought, "This, they say, is a wise man. I will see whether he be wise or no." So she asked him a question by a gesture of the hand. Looking towards the bodhisattva, she opened her hand. Her idea was to inquire whether the king took good care or not of this wise man whom he had brought from another country. When the bodhisattva saw that she was asking him a question by gesture, he answered it by clenching his fist. What he meant was, "Your reverence, the king brought me here in fulfillment of a promise, and now he keeps his fist tight closed and gives me nothing." She understood, and stretching out her hand, she rubbed her head, as much as to say, "Wise sir, if you are displeased, why do you not become an ascetic like me?" At this, the great being stroked his stomach, as who should say, Your reverence, there are many that I have to support, and that is why I do not become an ascetic." After this dumb questioning, she returned to her dwelling, and the great being saluted her and went to the king. Now the queen's confidants saw all this from a window, and coming before the king, they said, "My lord, Mahosada has made a plot with Bairi, the ascetic, to seize your kingdom, and he is your enemy." So they slandered him. What have you heard or seen?" the king asked. They said, "Sire, as the ascetic was going out after her meal, seeing the great being, she opened her hand, as who should say, 'Cannot you crush the king flat like the palm of the hand or a threshing floor, and seize the kingdom for yourself?' And Mahosada clenched his fist, making as though he held a sword, as who should say, 'In a few days I will cut off his head and get him into my power.' She signaled, 'Cut off his head by rubbing her own head with her hand. The great being signaled, 'I will cut him in half by rubbing his belly.' 'Be vigilant, sire, Mahosada ought to be put to death.' The king, hearing this, thought, 'I cannot hurt the wise man. I will question the ascetic.' Next day, accordingly, at the time of her meal, he came up and asked, 'Madam, have you seen wise Mahosada?' 'Yes, sire, yesterday as I was going out after my meal.' 'Did you have any conversation together?' 'Conversation? No. But I had heard of his wisdom, and in order to try it, I asked him by dumb signs, shutting my hand, whether the king was open-handed to him or closed-fisted. Did he treat him with kindness or not? He closed his fist, implying that his master had made him come hither in fulfillment of a promise, and now gave him nothing. Then I rubbed my head to inquire why he did not become an ascetic, if he were not satisfied. He stroked his belly, meaning that there were many for him to feed, many bellies to fill, and therefore he did not become an ascetic. And is Mahosada a wise man? The king asked. Yes, indeed, sire, in all the earth there is not his like for wisdom. After hearing her account, the king dismissed her. After she had gone, the sage came to wait upon the king, and the king asked him, Have you seen, sire, the ascetic Berry? Seen, sir, the ascetic Berry? Yes, sire, I saw her yesterday on her way out, and she asked me a question by dumb signs, and I answered her at once, and he told the story as she had done. The king, in his pleasure that day, gave him the post of commander-in-chief, and put him in sole charge. Great was the glory, second only to the king. Mahosada thought, The king all at once has given me exceeding great renown. This is what kings do, even when they wish to slay. Suppose I try the king to see whether he has good will towards me or not. No one else will be able to find this out, but the ascetic Berry is full of wisdom, and she will find a way. So, taking a quantity of flowers and scents, he went to the ascetic and said, after saluting her, Madam, since you told the king of my merits, the king has overwhelmed me with splendid gifts. But whether he does it in sincerity or not, I do not know. It would be well if you could find out for me the king's mind. She promised to do so, and the next day, as she was going to the palace, the question of Dakarakasa, the water demon, came into her mind. Then this occurred to her. I must not be like a spy, but I must find an opportunity to ask the question and discover whether the king has good will to the wise man. So she went. And after her meal she sat still, and the king saluting her, sat down on one side. Then she thought, if the king bears ill will to the sage, and when he is asked the question, if he declares his ill will in the presence of a number of people, that will not do. I will ask him apart. She said, Sire, I wish to speak to you in private. The king sent his attendants away. She said, I want to ask your majesty a question. Ask, madam, and if I know it, I will reply. Then she recited the first stanza in the question of Dakarakasa. If there were seven of you voyaging in the ocean and a demon seeking for a human sacrifice should seize the ship, in what order would you give them up and save yourself from the water demon? The king answered by another stanza in all sincerity. First I would give my mother, next my wife, next my brother, fourth my friend, fifth my Brahmin, sixth myself, but I would not give up Mahosata. Thus the ascetic discovered the goodwill of the king towards the great being, but his merit was not published thereby, so she thought of something else. In a large company I will praise the merits of these others, and the king will praise the wise man's merit instead. Thus the wise man's merit will be made as clear as the moon shining in the sky. So she collected all the denizens of the inner palace, and in their presence asked the same question and received the same answer. Then she said, Sire, you say that you would give first your mother, but a mother is of great merit, and your mother is not as other mothers. She is very useful. And she recited her merits in a couple of stanzas. She reared you and she brought you forth, and for a long time was kind to you. When Chumpi offended against you, she was wise and saw that this was for your good, and by putting a counterfeit in your place, she saved you from harm. Such a mother who gave your life, your own mother who bore you in her womb, for what fault could you give her to the water demon? To this the king replied, Many are my mother's virtues, and I acknowledge her claim upon me, but mine are still more numerous. The story of Chulani's mother, what she did for him, is told in the sub-commentary, and I think it's worth reading. Actually, I'll just skip by it. If you want to read, you're welcome to look in the text. My mother's virtues are many, and I acknowledge her claims upon me, but mine are still more numerous. And then he described her faults in a couple of stanzas. Like a young girl, she wears ornaments when she ought not to use. She mocks unseasonably at doorkeepers and guards. Unbidden, she sends messages to rival kings. And for these faults, I would give her to the water demon. So be it, sire. Yet your wife has much merit, and she declared her merit thus. She is chief amongst womankind. She is exceeding gracious of speech. Devoted, virtuous, who cleaves to you like your shadow, not given to anger, prudent, wise, who sees your good. For what fault would you give your wife to the water demon? He described her faults. By her sensual attractions, she makes me the subject of evil influence, and asks what she should not for her sons. In my passion, I give her many and many a gift. I relinquish what is very hard to give, and afterwards I bitterly repent. For that fault, I would give my wife to the water demon. The ascetic said, "Be it so, but your younger brother, Prince Tikinamanti, is useful to you. For what fault would you give him? He who gave prosperity to the people, and when you were living in foreign parts, brought you back home, he whom great wealth could not influence, peerless bowman and hero, Tikinamanti, for what fault would you give your brother to the water demon?" Again, his story is told in the sub-commentary. The king described his fault. He thinks, I gave prosperity to the people. I brought him back home when he was living in foreign parts. Great wealth could not influence me. I am a peerless bowman and hero and sharp in counsel. By me he was made king. He does not come to wait on me, madam, as he used to do. That is the fault for which I would give my brother to the water demon. The ascetic said, "So much for your brother's fault, but Prince Danuseka is devoted in his love for you and very useful." And she described his merit. "In one night, both you and Danusekawa were born here, both called Panchala, friends and companions. Through all your life he has followed you. Your joy and pain were his, zealous and careful by night and day in all service. For what fault would you give your friend to the water demon?" Then the king described his fault. "Madam, through all my life he used to make merry with me, and today also he makes free excessively for the same reason. If I talk in secret with my wife, in he comes unbidden and unannounced. Give him a chance and an opening. He acts shamelessly and disrespectfully. This is the fault for which I would give my friend to the water demon." The ascetic said, "So much for his fault, but the chaplain is very useful to you." And she described his merit. "He is clever, knows all omens and sounds, skilled in signs and dreams, going out and coming in, understands all the tokens in earth and air and stars. For what fault would you give the Brahmin to the water demon?" The king explained his fault. "Even in company, he stares at me with open eyes. Therefore, I would give this rascal with his puckered brows to the water demon." Then the ascetic said, "Sire, you say you would give to the water demon all these five, beginning with your mother, and that you would give your own life for the wise Mahosadha, not taking into account your great glory. What merit do you see in him?" And she recited these stanzas. "Sire, you dwell amidst your courtiers, in a great continent surrounded by the sea, with the ocean in place of an encircling wall. Lord of the earth, with a mighty empire, victorious sole emperor, your glory has become great. You have 16,000 women dressed in jewels and ornaments, women of all nations resplendent like maidens divine. Thus provided for every need, every desire fulfilled, you have lived long in happiness and bliss. Then by what reason or what cause do you sacrifice your precious life to protect the sage?" On hearing this, the king recited the following stanzas in praise of the wise man's merit. "Since Mahosadha, madam, came to me, I have not seen the steadfast man do the most trifling wrong. If I should die before him at any time, he would bring happiness to my sons and grandsons. He knows all things, past or future. This man without sin I would not give to the water demon. Thus this birth came to its appropriate end." Then the ascetic thought, "This is not enough to show forth the wise man's merits. I will make them known to all people in the city like one that spreads scented oil over the surface of the sea." So taking the king with her, she came down from the palace and prepared a seat in the palace courtyard and made him sit there. Then gathering the people together, she asked the king the question of the water demon over again from the beginning. And when he had answered it as described above, she addressed the people thus, "Hear this, men of Panchala, which Chulani has said. To protect the wise man, he sacrifices his own precious life. his mother's life, his wife's and his brother's, his friend's life and his own, Panchala is ready to sacrifice. So marvelous is the power of wisdom, so clever and so intelligent, for good in this world and for happiness in the next. So, like one that places the topmost pinnacle upon a heap of treasure, she put the pinnacle on her demonstration of the great being's merit. Here endeth the question of the water demon, and here endeth also the whole tale of the great tunnel. And follows is the identification of the people in the birth. Upalavana was Beri, who is the Buddha's chief female disciple. Suddhodana was the wise man's father, who was the Bodhisattva's father in his last birth. Mahamaya, the Bodhisattva's mother, was the mother of Mahasiddha. The beautiful Bimba was Amara, who was the wife of Siddhartha. Ananda was the parrot. Ananda is the Buddha's attendant, who is that mischievous parrot. Sariputta was Julani. Sariputta is his chief disciple. Was Julani the king. Mahasiddha was the Buddha, the lord of the world. Thus understand the birth. Devadatta was Kevatta. Devadatta was the Buddha's archenemy and tried to kill him on several occasions. Was Kevatta, the evil minister of Julani. Julanandika was Talata. I'm not sure who Julanandika was. Sundari was Panchala Chandi. Yasasika was the queen. Ambatta was Govinda. Potapada was Pukusa. Pilotika was Devinda. Satchaka was Senaka. I think these are all, ascetics in the time of the Buddha. Satchaka was an ascetic who converted to Buddhism. Mangalika was Queen Udumbara. Dita Mangalika. I forget who that is. Kundali was the minor bird. Kundala Kesi. These names are all corrupted, I think. And Laludayi was Videha. Laludayi, of course, was the clown monk who got everything wrong. Was Videha the king who got everything wrong? And thus ends the Mahasiddha Jataka. Thank you all for listening. Have a good day.